Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Goddess Alive Radio. This is Kimberly Moore, and I am the priestess and founder of Mother House of the Goddess and your humble hostess. So delighted to be here with you. I was sorry that we missed last Thursday. For anyone that had tried to tune in, we did have a personal emergency last minute, but we are back, as in the royal way, as in we... Me, we, the goddesses, the kitties, we're all here. So for those of you that are still digging out up north, I hope your winter is going a little better, although everybody looked like they had a really good time sledding and all that good stuff. So hopefully things are going to soothe down the next week or two as we are settling into the season of Imbolc, the time of the quickening. And Breeds Day, the goddess Breed. So we've got lots of great things coming up. Just a little bit of housekeeping before I bring on my absolutely marvelously wonderful guest, Lariann Lumby. And we are going to talk about Mary Magdalene and Beloved Partnership and her book and her courses. Lots of good stuff. I just want to remind everybody, we've got some phenomenal things going on at MysterySchoolOfTheGoddess.net, which is where all the courses are listed. We have Fire Magic of the Goddess, Daughters of the Sun. We have a divination practicum, an inspiring Imbolc. We have a new energy clearing course. I mean, it is stock full. Normandy Ellis is with us. We're getting ready to start for February an Isis course with Normandy for the month. And, of course, Lara Amazoni will be doing the Mysteries of the Yoginis coming up in March. It is so full. And rumor has it, rumor, that Bridget, we have a Breed Bridget course that we'll be launching in the next few days from Jude Lawley. And, of course, you do not want to miss the Mary Magdalene Activation and Ordination courses. They are stock full. So we're going to talk about those tonight with Lariann Lumby, who is the creator and the Magdalene priestess, and lots of good stuff. I also invite you to pop over to Mother House of the Goddess because we've got some really phenomenal things going on over there as well. And on Wednesday, February 2nd, you can join me and Brandy Offset at the Goddess Full Moon Group, and we're going to be celebrating Imbolc kind of the Orisha way. It is also the feast day of the Orisha goddess Oya, and we're going to be doing a discussion and meditation for her. So, talk about the quickening, right? I mean, that is what Imbolc is. It is the quickening of the year. This is when the seeds that have been planted are kind of, you know, doing a little bit of rock and roll under the surface in the alluvial soil of goddess and getting ready to spring forth with spring. So we are busy. Generating all of that marvelous energy. So we have Lariann Lumby with us tonight. I have to tell you, so it's so funny. Lari, it's been like this whirlwind thing. Somebody had sent me an email about her. We jumped on the phone. I read her book, Song of the Beloved, which is a fiction book on Mary Magdalene, although I have to tell you there's tons of wisdom and lots of truth in that book, in my opinion. And it was marvelous. The next thing I know, we were able to get the Mary Magdalene Activation and Ordination courses up. And Lariann has become a dear friend very quickly. So with great delight, we welcome her to Goddess Live Radio. Lari, are you there?
I'm here.
How are you? And welcome.
Thank you. I'm good. And boy, is quickening the appropriate term. And I think we're already in the midst of it.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it seems like it happened a little bit early. I think she was getting impatient with the Mercury retrograde, too.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Like, all right, enough of that review. Forward movement.
Yes, exactly.
So, Lari, for our listeners, tell us a little bit about you and how you came to Mary Magdalene. Or how she came to you?
That's a large question. Well, I think just to kind of set the context, I was raised Catholic, and so you know, the whole Jesus story, the Mary Magdalene story was always part of my experience, but Mary was really kind of, you know, in the shadows, if you will. Mary Magdalene was in the shadows. And, you know, the only perception that was ever put forward about her was that she was the adulterous woman or a sinful woman in some ways. And so that was kind of all you ever knew. And then fast forward, seventh grade music class, our former nun music teacher played us the Jesus Christ Superstar soundtrack, and I was absolutely enraptured. And it was both Jesus and Mary came to me as honest to goodness human beings, and not these, you know, in Jesus's case, not this deity that's sitting on an altar unreachable 10,000 miles away, but a living, breathing human being who had fear and anger and frustration and all of that. And then Mary suddenly became somebody. Like, wait a minute, here's this woman that was right there in the midst of all of it, had some sort of intimate leadership role, but it was very much cloaked, you know, in the rock and roll version. And that kind of started it. And an interesting, I think, little tidbit is that while that image was there kind of in my subconscious, where I first went into, I would call it Magdalene energy, was through Morgan Le Fay and through the Arthurian legends. And it didn't come back. Yeah, it was very interesting. So I was just, you know, Mists of Avalon fell into my lap sometime in my early 20s. And, you know, I read that book voraciously cover to cover about 8 times and pretty much have it memorized. And then when I went into my ministry studies, I really delved into Mary Magdalene and wrote a research paper on her. And then that just, the floodgates opened and book after book after book fell into my lap or fell off of shelves at bookstores, or I heard about something and it led me to something else. And I found this Mary that nobody else knew other than obviously the scholars that were writing about her. And so that started the scholarly piece. And then I started having visitations. So whether it was in meditation or in dreams or in kind of shamanic kind of situations, Mary would appear to me. And it just became kind of a regular thing. And yeah, so a very interesting journey, and it's not done yet.
Isn't that exciting that it's not done yet?
Yeah, it really is exciting. And, you know, it just keeps unfolding in so many different ways. And, you know, as I, when I was working on the novel, I had to close the doors to all literature on Mary Magdalene because I really needed, I needed the channel to be clear, and I didn't want it to be influenced by other writings. And after finishing the book and then starting to do, you know, the traditional publishing things you have to do, like find reviews and those kinds of things, I reached out to a lot of other Magdalene authors. And, you know, what I discovered in that process is that she really reveals herself to each person in a very unique way. And, you know, for those that are called into that energy, she is who they need her, or maybe she is who she needs to be for that person where they're at in their journey. And so I'm finding that there's all kinds of different Marys or at least interpretations of Mary Magdalene. And I just find that really interesting and also very exciting, because it really, I guess, presents that limitlessness of the goddess, you know, that it just comes in whatever form it needs to come for whoever needs it in the way that they need it. And it's so unique and personal and intimate. And I just find that really exciting.
It is. It really is exciting. You know, it's exciting to see Mary Magdalene reclaimed, revisioned, venerate it, you know, in such a magnificent way that is empowering to so many women. And even for me, like, you know, I wasn't raised Christian, Laurie, but Mary Magdalene was always kind of an interesting person, maybe because they all wanted to whisper about her.
Right.
You know? So there had to be some good stuff there. So it's really interesting. What is the general reaction that you have from people about Mary Magdalene? Is it generally positive, or, you know, how do people react?
You know, it's overwhelmingly positive. And what I see in both men and women, but especially in women, is it's like, and this, I would say, I have to say, women who were raised in a Christian tradition, who had, you know, a very different experience of Mary, and obviously are growing up in a tradition where women are not afforded any sort of equal rights. In fact, you know, even in the Catholic Church, women are not allowed to be ordained. They are not allowed any sort of leadership roles. And so, you know, for women that have grown up in those kinds of traditions where there's that limited perception and valuation of women, and specifically, you know, the way that Mary, you know, we've been led to believe for 2,000 years that she was the adulterous woman. And when these women learn that that's not at all the case, that there's no scriptural foundation for that at all, and that Mary, in fact, had a prominent leadership role in the early, you know, in the early dissemination of Jesus' messages, it's like this light goes on, and they're flooded with relief, and there's this energy that fills them that is all about liberation and empowerment, and it's so amazing to watch that happen. You know, to just sit in a room and watch these flames ignite, and, you know, and then everything else comes flooding out, you know, whether it's frustration or anger or grief over the way women have been denigrated in the institutional church, or, you know, things like, I always knew this. You know, there's this deep intuitive knowledge in so many women mm-hmm. that I work with, and it's almost like for the first time someone is saying, your intuition is right. And there's this validation and empowerment that comes from that. And it's just, it's so amazing. And I'm so grateful to be able to witness to that.
Well, I'm grateful to you as well. I really enjoyed Song of the Beloved very much. I enjoyed your interpretation of Mary Magdalene. And, you know, I also like your stance on interpreting the goddess or interpreting Mary Magdalene. So let's talk about that a little bit. Because
okay.
I think it's valuable, you know. I think that, you know, as I've always maintained, you ask 100 different priestesses about one goddess and you're going to get 100 different answers. Everybody
right.
sees goddess, you know, or sees a different aspect of goddess. And the joy is that we have these different experiences and can still meet in the middle. And,
right.
you know, I have read the material, obviously, by Margaret Starbird, by Joan Norton. I've read multiple books on Mary Magdalene besides that. And I really kind of revel just in the fact that she's a topic for discussion, first of all.
Yeah. Right.
And secondly, you know, because there's empowering bits
from all of it. But what I really enjoyed from Song of the Beloved, because I could never figure out the whole prostitution bit with her, right, is I really like how you dealt with it in Song of the Beloved. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, what part?
Yeah, about how you present it, her being viewed as a fallen woman instead of as a prostitute, you know? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that part was actually really surprising to me, and I was so resistant to writing that portion of the novel. To maybe give your listeners a little bit of context, you know, I had envisioned, I guess, kind of a Wonder Woman version of Mary Magdalene as I went into writing the novel, and I wanted to be really clear that she wasn't the prostitute. You know, she wasn't the adulterous woman, and I didn't want any sort of negative experience of sexuality to be part of the book at all. And as I sat down to write, very quickly what showed up was a sexual assault. And I was shocked by that, and I was resistant to it, and I'm like, nope, this can't be it. This is, you know, this is not what Mary, this is not Mary's experience, blah, blah, blah. And it was so strong. You have to write this. And, you know, I really sat in meditation and contemplation with that, and I asked Mary, I'm like, why does this need to be in here? Because, you know, this kind of supports the whole adulterous woman, sinful woman thing, blah, blah, blah. And Mary's answer to me was no. She said there are so many women that have been victims of hierarchical, patriarchal assault. There have been so many women that have been victimized in the hands of evil men. And she said, this is an every woman experience, and it needs to be in the book. And, you know, then what came after that, I was resistant to as well. You know, there was depression, there was PTSD, there was all of the things that arise out of a traumatic assault situation. And that had to be in there too, because this is real life. These are the real experiences of women. And what I loved is that what also came through then was the transformation. You know, how do you crawl out from assault? How do you crawl out from trauma? How do you find healing in the midst of something that would be so horrible? And, you know, in her culture, you know, the woman was at fault. And the woman would be the one that is executed or stoned because she had inappropriate sexual relationships. You know, even if it was rape, it didn't matter that it was rape, it was her fault. And to see Mary move through that experience and find liberation and freedom and healing, and then to be empowered through that experience was ultimately kind of the energy that I was really excited to see carried through something that I was very resistant to and ultimately didn't want in the book but had to be there.
Yes. I think you handled it beautifully. It's a very powerful and moving part of the book. And that the agent, if you will, of love and healing was Jesus, was handled quite beautifully as well. You know, I mean, he's a teacher, an inspirational teacher, you know, coming to the world. And to have the partnership, as you described it, you know, that really, to me, was inspiring. Really inspiring.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I'm excited about where you're going from here with the Song of the Beloved and everything.
Thank you. Do you have some insight into that that I don't know?
Very well may. No. Have you started working on the other books? Or how far along are you?
Oh, yeah. I'm 30,000 words into book two. And right now, Mary and her family are wandering around in the desert of the Sinai Peninsula, trying to find their way to Egypt, and that's where it sits. And so I've been just letting that seed sit in the soil, as you say, and waiting for whenever it is that it's time to start writing again. And in the meantime, I've been researching. So I've been doing a lot of research in, you know, first century Egypt and specifically Alexandria, and looking at some of the traditions of the Egyptian goddesses, specifically Isis. And yeah, so there's been a lot of really fun research happening, and there's pieces that I know are going to be in this book. I am just not sure yet how they're all going to weave together. And yeah, and then there will eventually be, Mary Magdalene willing, there'll be two more books after this one. So it's cooking along.
That is amazing. So what is your process for talking to Mary Magdalene, to connecting with her?
You know, it takes many forms. Definitely just when I'm in my daily meditation, you know, I invoke her presence, invite her presence to be with me. When I'm working with clients, when I'm doing Reiki, I definitely invite her to be present. Anytime I'm doing circle, you know, when I'm calling in the directions, she's the Queen of the West for me. And when she just decides to show up. And when I'm writing, that's an interesting process because I'm very much aware of two minds being present, if that makes sense. It doesn't feel like, you know, like I know some people that are doing direct channeling, and it's very much they just get out of the way and somebody else is working through them, and they kind of have no recollection of that process, and they have mm-hmm. this finished written word, and they're like, oh, cool. For me, it's almost like, oh, I just got the word. It's an embodied experience. It's like Mary's in me, writing through me. So it's her voice, but it's also my voice at the same time.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Mary.
I know, I've like got little goosebumps here going, you know.
Yeah. Well, and that goes right along with, you know, I don't share this with a lot of people, but apparently now I'm being called to share it with you and whoever else is listening. A few years back when I was studying with a shamanic practitioner and learning some shamanic practices and shamanic techniques and ultimately cultivating journey work and integrating that with what I had already been doing as a mystic, and had a profound journey with Mary Magdalene, and, you know, the end result or the end command was be the Magdalene. And so I've really tried to adhere to that, accept that, abide by that, and it also feels like there's a multitude of women and men that are being called into that same embodiment. And, you know, when I'm doing the activation and the ordination as part of the Magdalene course, that's very much part of it, especially the ordination piece. You know, it's really allowing ourselves to embody the Magdalene energy and to be her presence in the world. And, you know, it makes me think of, you know, this idea of second coming, and that, you know, the Magdalene is having her second coming now, to all of these men and women that are called to embody her energy and her spirit and to bring that forth in the world to really help balance, to restore balance to the divine masculine and divine feminine. And, you know, to do that in a way that helps our world in its journey of wholing, W-H-O-L-I-N-G, wholing. And it's just, I don't know, it's an exciting time.
That is amazing. Well, I was so impressed, I will tell you, with the amount of material that in the Magdalene course, in the activation and ordination, and not just the amount. So that's the, let me see if I can phrase this a little bit more gracefully with the depth of it. You know, you have quite a handle on her, I think, and but in a magical way, in that you're kind of letting her lead, partner with you, and bring through just these amazing layers, you know.
Yeah, I've been just in awe over that whole process. You know, I've been teaching the Magdalene activation and ordination courses live, you know, with people in my classroom for the last couple of years, and it's just been profound the way it's unfolded and, you know, what has presented itself from session to session. And, you know, that in and of itself has been this very organic process of me saying, okay, what are we doing? You know, what is this going to look like this week? And just allowing it to come through. And, you know, it's just been really a profound experience. And, you know, the one thing that came through that was really interesting and also, I guess, exciting to me was in, you know, one of the initial sessions, taking all these lies that have been told about Mary and sanctifying them. You know, it's kind of like, here's the untruth, but as much as these lies have been told about Mary, this is what's been done to all women. And so we're going to bring these lies along with us through this process, and we are going to redeem them for all of humanity. And so, you know, if Mary wasn't the adulterous woman, neither were any women for being sensuous or sexual or, you know, seductive or feminine or, you know, any of the things that women have been judged wrongly for, or, you know, there's the whole double standards kind of thing. And, you know, so it's redeeming all of those things that have been taken away from women as part of their empowerment, you know, and saying, okay, well, whether this is true or not of Mary, this has become part of the Magdalene mystique. And so we're going to bring it along and we're going to make this right for all of us. And that part was unexpected, surprising, and really exciting. And to see how women have reacted to, and men, because I've had men in my Magdalene courses also, to see how they react to that. And, you know, it's, again, it's the light goes on. And there's a little piece of something burdensome that these people have been carrying that they're able to release. And, you know, it's almost like a soul retrieval. You know, it's calling back all the parts of all the holy and sacred and divine parts of who we are that have been supplanted by some, you know, fearful system, calling those back and making them sacred again and making them okay. And that's just really, I don't know, that's just super cool to me.
That is amazing. So tell me about the men in the Magdalene course and how they react.
Oh, this part just makes me want to cry. I've been so blessed with the men that have been part of these courses because
I don't even know how to give words to this. What I've seen in them is that they already possess a comfortability with their own divine feminine. And I see in them a hunger to be able to live that without being emasculated. And at the same time, I see in them a deep sensitivity to the violence that has been done to women in the name of, I don't know what, power and control. And they come into these classes with this eagerness, this openness, this tenderness, this vulnerability, and they hold space. This is the part that gives me shivers. They hold space for the violence that's been done to women. And they sit there as a witness of apology and forgiveness. And I see the transformation that happens in the women in the group because there's a man there bearing witness to the pain, the collective pain that women have experienced in the name of power and control. And it's this most amazing dynamic of healing and forgiveness and bearing witness and just being open and vulnerable and willing to hold that space. So these men are just, they're so sacred to me because they're able to do all of that and not lose their masculinity, you know, not lose their strength and not lose their courage. And it's just a profound holding that I just, I'm completely humbled to witness to.
That's kind of amazing.
Really is, and totally unexpected. Yeah, it's very amazing.
That's really beautiful. Really, really beautiful to hear. And, you know, it's interesting to me as working in many women's groups for many, many years and also, you know, working in co-ed groups, men and women. And I find that in many instances, it's very difficult for men to hold that space. It's very difficult for them not to get defensive, to allow women to talk and share, vent, and even to, you know, be angry or outraged and still just be steady. Do you know what I'm saying, Lori?
Oh, absolutely, because they mm-hmm. kind of have to be the scapegoat a little bit. You know, it's kind of like, it's like they have to bear the burden of being the scapegoat, even though, you know, there's nobody in the group saying, you did this to me, but they have to sit there and be, you know, it reminds, this is such a stupid metaphor, and I can't believe this is what's coming to me. But the movie What About Bob? They have those stupid puppets that they do their therapy with. Have you seen that movie?
Yes.
Yeah. It's like that. You know, the men are like they're the puppet. You know, they're the ones holding that space, representing the violence that has been done to women, even though they're not the ones that did it. But they're able to hold that kind of collective guilt, if you will. And it's just a profound experience. And I'm seeing more and more men that are able to do that. Like, you know, when I first started doing this work, 90% of the people that showed up to my classes were women. And now, you know, it's not 50-50 yet, but, you know, we're definitely, you know, 60-40, 30-70 point. So it's not 90-10 anymore. And the men that are coming forth, you know, they're just these amazing, kind, brave, gentle, strong, you know, they're just... they have this incredible balance within them that's really exciting.
Ex- exciting and rare.
Yeah, but you know what? Yeah, exciting and rare. And I think it's changing. And that's the part that's exciting to me because, you know, I also work, you know, I'm 51 and I work with a lot of millennials. So, you know, the 20, 30 somethings and even into, I would say, you know, close to 40. And the men that I know in that age group are really these amazing, very well integrated, well balanced men. And, you know, I see a whole different relationship dynamic coming out of that generation than what I've seen in my own. And it's just really exciting. And, you know, the men that I am referring to that have been in the classes that have been holding that space, they're older. You know, they're 50, 60, 70 years old. And they're holding that space and they're embodying that kind of sensitivity and balance. So I think I believe things are changing. And I believe that's part of the transition that we're going through right now as a world, is that we're finding a way to reclaim those divine aspects of all of us. And, you know, because this whole unholy masculine, unholy feminine, power and control, weakness and, you know, helplessness thing hasn't worked for any of us. And it has to change. And I believe that what I'm witnessing is proving that it is changing.
Oh, again, your mouth, goddess's ears. It would be so marvelous, you know, it would be so marvelous to, you know, have more men that understand what it is to hold space for women and to allow women to hold space for them, you know.
Yes.
It would be simply amazing, you know. I think the Mary Magdalene energy, and as a goddess, that she brings this essential energy to women who have been villainized, who have been misunderstood, who have been accused wrongly, but still have hope, you know?
Yes.
She has hope in the end. I mean, you know, let's not forget, you know, Jesus may have been the agent of her healing, but she had to allow it too and participate.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Quite a contract there going on, you know, quite an amazing partnership going on there. And you know, what's sad too is that it's such an example of an amazing love. And it makes you kind of wonder, you know, not wonder. Let me go back a little bit. Now we understand, I guess, why the church would like to cover that up, because it was far easier to control women.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, if there's a question about Jesus being married or, God forbid, sexually active, then there's no more justification for the celibate male priesthood, which is how the Catholic Church has gotten its power, you know, and its property and its wealth and everything else was couched on, you know, that order of celibate male priesthood that they said was based on Jesus's example, which is not even true. So, yeah. Yeah.
So interesting. There's just so many layers that are interesting. There's a book, I don't know, I think you and I talked about this, so forgive me if I'm asking again, but there's a book called I Remember Union that is about the story of Mary Magdalene and Jesus and kind of the whole time that he lived. what was so interesting, the book is channeled. The author makes no bones about that. But it's very interesting because there's the she writes about their soul consciousness as she's telling the story. So it's very interesting, set up in a very interesting, even talking about the soul consciousness to, for Judas, you know, and Thomas and everything. And I really liked in your book, too, how you wove these figures into the story, because I think there was an enormous soul contract going on there, not just between Jesus and Mary Magdalene. Do you want to talk about some of the secondary characters?
Yeah. Let's see. Who do I pick on first? In Song of the Beloved, I love the character of Judas, and I so wanted to redeem his story. You know, it's like, you know, recently there's been revelations, if you will, documents that have come out and suggested that, you know, Judas knew what he was doing or Jesus told him to do it. And I'm like, have you people read scripture? This is right. It's implied in scripture. This is not news, you know. but I didn't want Judas. I didn't want Judas to be the scapegoat anymore, and I didn't want him to be, you know, the repentant man that had to go hang himself. And so I recrafted, or that story was recrafted for me, and I love the Judas that came out of that. You know, it's just this gentle. Gentle person that had a deeply intimate relationship with Jesus and understood his teachings in ways that the others did not, and had this point where he had to make a decision. You know, do I follow one line of thought or do I follow the line of thought that resonates as truth for me? And he made that choice. And, you know, that's what I love about him. And I'm really excited for what's happening with him in the next book. Because he plays a very significant role in the second book, or at least I think he does. And I'm so excited about the Judas that came through, because it's very different than what canonical scripture says and what tradition has kind of given to him. And so I was excited about him. And I don't know. I just love all the characters because they're so rich. You know, it's easy to hate Peter because he's just a dick. You know? And I think he really represents a metaphor. You know, Peter to me was a metaphor for the hierarchical, patriarchal, misogynistic institution, and plays that role very well in my novel. And I just love the way the characters came through. You know, it just happened so organically and, you know, so effortlessly. And I think they really each kind of represent profound archetypes, you know, like Martha. You know, I kept her kind of in that traditional role of, you know, the one that's the helper. You know, she's the mother of the heart and guardian of the home. And I love that archetype. You know, there's a place for Martha. We all have Martha in us, and we all need that Martha energy. And, you know, and Salome, which is a character that gets forgotten in scripture all the time, you know, her name gets mentioned in places.
I love how you handled Salome as well. It was beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, I liked her defiance. I liked her empowerment. I liked her courage. And she's going to play a more significant role in the next book also. So I'm excited to see how that comes through. And And, you know, the transformation that Lazarus undergoes also. And
And I love the way the raising of Lazarus came through in the novel. You know, it was really not literal in any way, shape, or form, and yet it was still about rising from the dead, you know, and emerging from the tombs that we create for ourselves in, you know, whatever that tomb might be, whether it's hatred or resentment or betrayal or woundedness. You know, we all create those tombs, and we need to come forth out of those.
Well said. Well said. Tell us about Authentic Freedom Academy. I want to remind our listeners for the links that are in the post underneath the radio show. AuthenticFreedomAcademy.com is where you can find Laurie and her writings. Although now, hooray, Laurie's writing every other week on MotherHouseOfTheGoddess.com too, which I'm so excited. But tell us about Authentic Freedom Academy and how does this weave in?
I'm never sure how to answer that question because Authentic Freedom has been this amazing organic thing. Let's see. Well, Authentic Freedom Academy is, I guess, the institution that I created for myself. And it's through that platform that I offer all the courses that I've developed. You know, I work with people one-on-one, spiritual direction and empower, you know, I call it empowerment training for lay people. And, you know, the word authentic freedom came out of my first book, which is Authentic Freedom, Claiming a Life of Contentment and Joy. And it's really the foundational, Authentic Freedom, the book, is really the foundation of my work. It's about helping people identify the fears that are keeping them from being their most authentic self. And then providing specific meditation, mindfulness, and creativity practices to help them move through those fears so that they can be their most authentic self. And it's really a profound process, and, you know, you get a glimpse of it in Song of the Beloved, because I did kind of include that in there. And I was really shocked when I was when Authentic Freedom was being revealed to me, and I have to say it that way because, you know, it was a process of prayer and openness and reflection and observation that whole protocol came through for me. And as I had kind of finished being open, allowing the protocol to come through, the Gospel of Mary Magdalene with commentary by Jean-Yves Leloup fell into my lap, and as I was reading his material, I was finding so many things that were reflecting what had come through me as the Authentic Freedom process. So I have to give Mary Magdalene credit for being part of that revelation for me, you know, because the connections are too close for it to not have been somehow divinely guided by her.
That's amazing. Now, that's one of the books that is on our Mary Magdalene portal page. You add it to that on Mother House. Is that correct? The Gospel of Mary Magdalene.
Yes. Yep. The Gospel of Mary Magdalene by Jean-Yves Leloup is it's the original Coptic text with translation and then his commentary. And his commentary, I love him. He's my favorite author on the Gnostic scriptures, because it's not just a scholarly commentary, it's his own prayer and reflection, and you can tell that he has embodied these teachings in the way that he communicates and expresses them. It's just, I love his stuff, and I drew heavily from him in Song of the Beloved. You know, it was his work really, really influenced my understanding of Mary and her place and role in that whole Jesus story, Jesus mission, and then, you know, the I don't even want to say the development of the church, because I don't believe she was part of the institutional church ever. You know, I think she was part of one of the authors that I've read, Albert Nolan, talks about two distinct churches, one being the institutional and one being the mystical. And I think of Mary Magdalene as the head of the mystical church. Well, you know, it's her energy and spirit and influence that guided the formation of that. And, you know, we see glimpses of it in some of the religious orders and monastic orders. You can see the glimpses of that mysticism and that esoteric experience of the divine. And I really see Mary as kind of the head of that, if you will.
Oh, I love that. I absolutely love that.
Yeah, it makes, I don't know.
It's very impactful to hear that, you know.
It's impossible to hear that?
Oh, no, impactful. You know, it has
a great impactful, yes.
Yeah. No, never impossible. I don't use that.
No, it is. And, you know, that... landing on that awareness about, you know, two different churches unfolding out of, you know, Jesus's presence and his ministry was so, I don't want to say the word empowering. It was a comfort for me, you know, as I was struggling with the institutional church and at the place where I knew that I needed to extract myself from that, at least as an everyday kind of practice, and kind of find my own way, that book fell into my hands, and I found that piece about the mystical church, and I'm like, okay, I get this, you know. Because when you leave behind something that's been part of your tribal consciousness and part of your upbringing, and, you know, I tell people that have been raised Catholic, it's in your bones. You know, it's like you can't escape it. And there's so much I love about having been raised Catholic. You know, there's so much I love. And there's still so much I love. But I just couldn't be part of the institution anymore. And it was harder for me to leave the institutional church than it was to divorce. And, you know, you feel alone and unfettered and without a home. And when I learned about this idea of the mystical church, I was like, okay, that's my home. And it's not in a building. And it's not in a specific ritual. It's certainly not in dogma or the catechism or canon law or anything like that. It's an embodied experience that I carry with me. And so it's anywhere. You know, it's anywhere that I am is my own mystical church. And that was just an enormous healing piece for me.
That's beautiful. And I love that you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, I think so many times there are people, certainly, and warrant it in many cases, but that anger, I don't know that anger, you know, serves them well, you know, as they're reaching out and exploring, because I think it leaves wounds and it leaves pain that does need to be addressed.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and I'm not going to say I wasn't angry, because, you know, I was angry for a long darn time.
I think there's a purpose to it all. Yeah, but I, you know.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and I have to acknowledge that, you know, I was angry because of the way in which it became necessary for me to leave. And it was, you know, much more about anger as a face of grief than it was, you know, a F you or something like that. Though I'm sure those words passed my lips. But yeah, you can't stay there. You know, it's if you stay in that anger, you rot. And while there's a lot of energy in that anger, and it does feel as if it's a vehicle for protection, you know, what I found is that really it's just a source of self-destruction, and you have to make a choice. Do you want to stay in this anger, or do you want to find healing? And, you know, I chose healing. And you know, and ultimately, you know, I look at the church, and like I said, there's so much I love about having been raised Catholic, and there's, you know, the rituals and some of the traditions and the art and the architecture, and, you know, I mean, I could live in a Gothic cathedral and be completely content. And those are the pieces that I want to hang on to, you know, hang on to as not in a clinging way, but as a way of saying, these are the things that were sacred to me. And to be able to say, and these are the things that weren't. And to just let those pieces go so that I can be open to my own experience of the divine in whatever way the divine wants to present itself to me. And, you know, one of the things I'm finding that's really exciting, and I'm going to give you some credit for this, you know, since connecting with Mother House, the feminine divine has been so present to me in so many ways and supporting healing that I didn't even know was needed. And, you know, it's just, it's this mother energy, this holding, this supporting, this, you know, comforting kind of energy that I haven't experienced in this way before now. And so I'm really grateful for whatever it is that's shifting that's allowing me to have this experience. And it's the mother, you know, and it's, I don't know, it's something that's new and exciting and deepening for me. And again, it's resources falling into my lap that are supporting that. And it's just cool. Yeah.
It's so marvelous, you know, I'll tell you. Yeah, Goddess works in magnificent ways, doesn't she?
Yes, indeed.
I have been absolutely blown away, too, that what has been so cool for me to watch, too, with this is you brought your, you know, your gorgeous material and insights and wisdom with Mary Magdalene. And now you've got Brandy Ossett, who's made this anointing oil and spray, which I just got a little while ago, like the past week. It's amazing. And Anne-Marie's made these malas and prayer beads for Mary Magdalene to kind of, I mean, it's like you're growing the Mary Magdalene Mother House, too. It's amazing.
I know. And that whole thing, and you know this because you were witness to it, it just unfolded in this amazing way. And the collaboration with both Anne-Marie and Brandy has been so easy. I mean, it was just like, you know, a simple conversation with Brandy and boom, 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 you know, she got it. So the Magdalene was talking in her ear. And when she sent me the oil, I wanted to eat it. I mean, it is the most amazing oil I've ever had in my possession. And I put it on, and I'm like, I just want to bathe in this. And as I've shared it with other women that have been through the Magdalene ordination, their words are the same. They're like, oh, my God, I want to bathe in this. I want this all over my whole body. And then I got a call yesterday, or actually this morning, from one of my sister witches. And she got a direct command from the Magdalene because I had given her a small portion of the oil as part of the release ceremony that we did on Friday. And she called me this morning and said, I got a direct command. She said, we are supposed to anoint everyone. And she said, if we can't anoint them in person, we're supposed to anoint them energetically. And this is the oil. She said, this is the oil that we are supposed to anoint people with. And she asked for Brandy's number because she was going to order her own stockpile of oil. And I'm like, this is so cool.
That is so awesome. I know. It's such good. Well, I adore having Mary Magdalene, you know, and Mother House and on Mystery School, and you bringing your just gorgeous insights and wonderful energy with her. I'm so excited to see what happens next. So, you know, any help at all you need.
Thank you.
We want the next book.
Well, I'm eventually planning on a dedicated portal. So that's my intention.
Nice. See, more Mary Magdalene all the time.
Yes. And on my other courses, you know, it's the Magdalene stuff is, you know, to me it feels kind of like the gateway. And then there's this wealth of other amazing courses that I've developed. And, you know, I've felt for a long time like more people need to know about this and to be participating in this, because they are truly transformational materials, as are all the courses that are on Mother House. You know, this stuff is just profound. And you know, as we were moving into 2016, the really loud message that I got is that, you know, all of us that have been doing this work and doing this journey and really coming into our own mastery, you know, we're done being students and we are now the masters, because there's a mass awakening happening and we need to be ready. And that's what I feel like is happening. You know, I see Mystery School is exploding and there's more and more courses coming up, and, you know, it's people are starving and they're looking for support, and it's so exciting. It's such an exciting time to be in.
It is so exciting to have you, honestly, truly, Laurie. It's been magnificent. And, you know, it's going to be spectacular to see what else has happening. I really want to encourage our listeners, if you have any interest at all in Mary Magdalene, you need to connect with Laurie. You know, read her posts, check out our site, check out the intro course, which is free. It's brief but juicy. And then jump into that Mary Magdalene activation, because you will not regret it. It is so deep, so full of wisdom, and so marvelous, too. I think this is another great thing, Laurie, about you as a teacher. You know, we talk about that holding space. You have held space for people to really unfold the Magdalene as they will experience her. And that is really glorious.
Thank you. Thank you. That was my intention.
We need more. No.
Yeah.
I'm just there. I'm going, and the answer to that is more. Like,
more.
We will definitely get this kicked off first. So I want to, and for our listeners to check your email box over the next couple of days. We have some great things that are coming out. There's also a marvelous interview that we did with Laurie on MotherHouseOfTheGoddess.com. I encourage you to check it out. We had some fun. We're doing all of our Mystery School of the Goddess instructors. So it was kind of fun to sneak a peek in, and thank you for sharing, you know.
You're welcome.
You know, and the pictures of your altars are great. You've got a really hot Jesus on your altar, by the way. He's cute.
Yeah, would Jesus be anything but hot? Come on.
Right? Well, you know what's really funny is many years ago, when I saw Jesus Christ Superstar, it was Sebastian Bach played Jesus. Now, you want to talk about
Jesus.
Oh, my
gosh, that's crazy.
Oh, my God. And the really funny part is that I went with my very best friend, who's a lesbian. So the whole time I'm going, I think I can, like, kidnap Sebastian Bach, stuff him in the trunk of my car, and she's going, can we take Mary Magdalene? It was so funny.
You're like, sure, you take yours, I'll take mine, we'll both be happy.
Right, and I'll be all good. He was a great Jesus, let me tell you.
Oh.
Oh my goodness. Well, Laurie, anything to share about upcoming stuff other than come join you at Mystery School and on Authentic Freedom?
Yeah, there's I have a beloved partnership course that is percolating. Actually, it's complete. I just need to get it all up and on the Mystery School site and, you know, have a little chit-chat with you about how to do that. But, yeah, that's kind of the next thing is, you know, I really believe that part of the Magdalene energy is about this idea of beloved partnership and, you know, the kind of love that I believe she and Jesus shared, and that as a species, we are evolving out of codependency or you complete me and into something that is more collaborative and mutually supportive and fully reflective of our mutual wholeness. And that's what that course will be all about. And it's a fun course because it's the framework is fairy tales. So it's the book, the class is called Happily Ever After, kind of a play on our myth about relationship. And my favorite title for one of the sessions is Kissing Frogs. And it's all about, you know, the ones that don't work out. So that would be the next thing to watch for. But for right now, the Magdalene Activation Course is the one. And I'm just really excited and honored to share it with the Mystery School participants and students. And I'd love to hear what people are experiencing through that. So, yeah.
So good.
That's the major piece, yeah.
Yes, so good. Well, Laurie, thank you so much for tonight and for joining us. And to all of our listeners, check out Laurie. She's cool. And check out Song of the Beloved. It's a great read. It's going to kind of, you know, I would be very interested, and maybe we should do that. That would be kind of fun. Maybe we need to do an addendum to our Goddess Full Moon group, invite you to come on to talk about Mary Magdalene and let women share their experiences. Maybe we'll do that. And thank you. Thank you for being
yes.
part of this and joining so wholeheartedly and being so glorious. And such a great channel, you know, for the Divine
Thank
Feminine.
Thank you, Kimberly.
Body.
Thank you very much. And a shout out to the other Kim that brought us together.
Kim! Love you.
Because I know she's
cool
listening.
Yep, and she's another cool chick. And I'm not just saying that because Kims are cool. She's another very cool chick.
Yes, she is.
I love that vibe going on up there in Wisconsin. I do. I really do.
Yeah, it's a surprising place to find all of these amazing women. And I'm just super excited. And yeah. The universe,
yes.
The goddess planted me here for a reason, though it was, you know, I came here kicking and screaming.
Right. Well, there's always a reason for everything.
Exactly.
So, all right, my darling, thank you again. And, you know, check it out, mysteryschoolthegoddess.net, authenticfreedomacademy.com. And hit that Magdalene shop button for all of the goodies, you know, and check it out. And Song of the Beloved on Amazon. I ordered it right on my Kindle, and, you know, and there it was. It was great. And I was enraptured. I mean, I sat there, I read it. I couldn't stop. Oh, did I lose you, Laurie?
Nope, I'm here.
Oh my
Thank
God,
you. I'm honored by your words, Kimberly. It's,
yeah.
I go back and read it every now and then, and I go, who wrote this?
Right?
Yeah.
weird. I have a weird buzzing on my line. So we're going to say the energy is kicking here. And thank you again, Mari, so much. And
thank
for everybody, as we come out of this Mercury retrograde, he's gone direct this week. Put the umbrellas up just for a couple more days, I think. And, we'll stay as we are ducking a little bit. And have a glorious weekend, everyone. Have a glorious weekend. Thank you, Laurie. And we're going to drum
you out
with some great music. We've got, I think, you know, we should do some Flash Silver Moon. It feels like a Flash Silver Moon kind of night. So let's do some Blessings by Flash Silver Moon. All right, everyone. I will hopefully have you join us February 2nd, goddessfullmoongroup.com. It's free. Tune in. We're going to be talking about the Orisha Goddess. Well, yeah. Good night.
Say the third time's a charm.